Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH and 96.5 TIC. Well, I thought that this was an important show to do because here we are getting into fall. We just had a few cold evenings and chillier days. And as we move into fall, you know what's after that, winter. And this is really a big time of year in Connecticut where people start to think about making sure that they're going to be warm and make sure that their energy is going to be reliable going into these very cold months. So we're bringing on Brenda Watson. She is the Executive Director of Operation Fuel in Connecticut. Good morning, Brenda. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Brenda, so much to talk about here and only a half hour to do it. I mean, can we get a preview just to start off with how things are looking for this fall and winter season? You know, I've been hearing some reports and, you know, it's always hard to tell with forecasts very early on. But, you know, we're hearing those reports that maybe it's going to be a very cold winter and definitely people worrying about inflation and paying their bills and making sure that they stay warm. So, I mean, can we start off with just a summary of where we're at in Connecticut with this whole issue?
Well, if summer is any indication of what the fall and winter are going to look like, I'm pretty nervous. We have a summer-fall program that starts in July and ends at the end of October, and we've seen a record number of applicants come in. In the first 8 weeks of the program, we reached 2,000 households. Applying for assistance, and quite a few of those were applying for fuel, which also sent a signal to us that people need fuel for hot water, no matter what time of year it is. And I don't know if we haven't studied the stats yet, but I wonder if people were seeking fuel assistance earlier on because of the rise in cost. And also because of fear with all of the media reports around there being a fuel shortage because of our current geopolitics. So I'm really quite worried. We right now, as of today, we have nearly 2,500 applicants in our system, and we typically serve around 2,000 households in the entire summer-fall season. So given the fact that we have over a month or about 6 weeks left in this program season, I'm really worried. And we've already, we budget around $1.7 million for this time of year. We're very likely going to spend closer to two, if not over the $2.1 million.
Well, let's start off with this as well. What are you hearing from people? Obviously, they're concerned, but what are some of the things that they're specifically saying and telling you about their concerns?
Most folks are really concerned about, first of all, not knowing if they qualify for our programs or not. Folks are really worried about being able to keep the utilities on in their home because they have children who need lights to do homework. And also, my heat kicked on in the middle of the night. It dropped down to 40-something degrees. So it's that time of year where, you know, the shutoffs are going to start coming soon for folks who are struggling with energy affordability. And for quite a few people, there's just not enough money to keep up with the cost of food, the increasing cost of food, the increasing cost of home energy, along with the increasing cost of rent. Folks are struggling out there.
Is it a struggle for Operation Fuel? I mean, you mentioned just a minute ago about how you're likely going to be pushing $2 million for this season for Operation Fuel, and that's maybe $300,000 or so more than what you would typically budget for. Is that a factor because you've got rising prices for fuel? Is it because you have more people signing up for assistance? And are you guys worried about your ability to pay that extra cost?
So I think it's a combination of all of what you just said. The rising cost of home energy along with fuel and, people not being able to keep up with the the cost of basic needs and the cost of living in Connecticut. We are a little worried about being able to meet the demand. We're doing everything that we can now in terms of fundraising to, help bring in more resources, because the more resources we have, the more households we can, the more applicants and households we can help. So, we are a little worried. Last year we had a banner year. We provided over $5.2 million in grants and served nearly over 10,000 households. And we haven't had that a program season like that since about 2007, when we were awarded a $15 million grant from Governor Rell at the time. So, our resources have dwindled a bit between that time and I would say about 4 years ago. We've done very well in increasing the amount of revenue resources that we have so that we can help more people. But again, I've never seen this many households or applicants come through our program this early in the season. We typically peak around February, but I'm feeling like we've peaked in August.
That's insane that you're peaking here and it's the summer months and people are trying to get ahead of this and get in early. What's the application period and what does the application process typically look like?
Okay, so the like I said, we have a summer-fall program that starts in July. It ends at the end of October. And there are two ways in which people can apply. They can either go to our website and locate the fuel bank or intake site that's closest to them and make an appointment and apply that way. Or folks can go to our website and access our online application, and they can apply in the comfort of their own homes for as long as they have access to the internet and a computer. So those are the two ways in which you can apply. The application process is not that comprehensive. If you go to an intake site, it might take about 20 minutes. And if you do it at home, same amount of time, depending on, if you have all of your documentation ready to go and ready to upload. But it's not a very long process, and we've actually seen more applicants come, I wouldn't say come to us, but apply via our online application, bypassing the fuel banks because or intake sites, because it's a lot easier to just apply at your leisure, when you can do it. So, after work hours or even on weekends, folks can access the online application 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
If somebody misses the deadline and you guys are no longer accepting these applications, what happens? Is there any kind of perhaps forgiveness, or do you consider late applicants, or no?
We, depending on the situation, may consider a late applicant, but the other piece is that the state's Energy Assistance Program, also known as SEAP, that's the Connecticut Energy Assistance Program, is currently now accepting applications for winter heating. So that is a good way to kind of balance the time that, we shut down at the end of October. We reopen for applications in December. So having the Connecticut's Energy Assistance Program available for folks for heating is also a really great way to keep the assistance flowing for folks who may be struggling.
This morning on Face Connecticut, we're chatting with Brenda Watson. She is the Executive Director of Operation Fuel, helping families and individuals across Connecticut with their energy affordability and then, as for fall and winter, helping to keep them warm. Well, let's shift the conversation a little bit. I know that another thing that you guys do at Operation Fuel is advocating for energy affordability, right?
That's correct.
What goes on in that front? I mean, how do we try to get out there and say, let's stop these increasing prices or help make it affordable better for people, even if the prices do have to go up?
So that's a regulatory issue. And right now, through the Public Utility Regulatory Authority, the chair of that, also known as PURA, opened up a docket to investigate a low-income discount rate. And right now, that investigation, I believe, is close to finalized. There's a draft decision. I hadn't had a chance to read it yet, but our policy director, Gannon Long, has been heavily engaged in that process from day one. And I believe comments from us are due soon. So that is something that Operation Fuel has been working on since the days of Pat Rice. You might remember Pat Rice, my predecessor. That was her mission. She wanted to implement a low-income discount rate in Connecticut because all of the New England states, including New York and New Jersey, have a discounted utility rate. And since 2005 through the time that she retired in 2016, it was one of her policy objectives. Unfortunately, at that time, the temperature just wasn't right in the state. But now we're finally getting to a place of where there's political engagement on a low-income discount rate, rate along with our regulatory body who's investigating this. So I think we're going to get close to achieving that goal of a discounted rate. At this time, I can't speak to what the details are, but I'm happy to come back on a show and get into it and provide that update.
Oh, absolutely. We'd be happy to have you back on. Brenda Watson, the Executive Director of Operation Fuel, when that time comes. And so is that something that you're going to be trying to push for and talk about and advocate for? The legislative session will be starting before we know it early next year. Is that something you're going to be out there doing?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I think we're long overdue for a discounted rate in the state. You know, the utility companies, they charge everyone the same rate. And I can understand that, but at the same time, there are some serious affordability issues that also tie into folks not having access to a reliable grid. There are people who lose power all the time when there's a storm event or, natural disasters come through. It's the same people who lose power, but across the board, everyone is charged the same rate. So there's a bit of an imbalance there. And, you know, it's time that we take a deeper look at how the utility companies approach this issue, because they're providing a life-saving basic need. And unfortunately, the way that our, going back over 100 years ago when electricity became something that, you know, folks could have in their home, it really was about, earnings and being able to sell. So times have changed. And we see now that having utilities in your home, having heating, having cooling in the summer, having water, those things play into one's health and safety. And if folks don't have access to reliable water, safe drinking water, and reliable energy, it really significantly impacts your health. And for some people, it can actually be, a matter of life and death. If you're relying on systems to keep help you with your breathing, and your power goes down, That's a huge risk to one's health. And even for people who have heart conditions, there are people who need to have cooling in the summer. And without it, it can mean a trip to the emergency room. And, that's never a good thing.
Well, knock on wood, we were pretty thankful this summer not to have a massive storm like, let's think back to Tropical Storm Isaias in 2020, mm-hmm. where a lot mm-hmm. of people were out of power for a week, in some cases a little longer. And
at least
a few days, people were
right.
out of power. So we did not have anything catastrophic like that this summer. And knock on wood, hopefully we don't this winter. But let's say that we do. What are some ways that people can make sure that they're prepared for it? Is that something that you guys advocate for to people who are part of Operation Fuel?
We try to. And yes, what people can do to prepare is by simply paying attention to those alerts as they come in. I think there's a fair amount of denial because Connecticut seems to be a bit of a bubble where, you know, we really do have good policy in this state, good energy policy and good regulatory policy, and good water policy. Nothing's perfect, but at the same time, you know, things that happen in other parts of the country are not happening here, like what happened in Texas a couple years ago and what's happening now in Alabama with the water. We don't have those issues, but at the same time, people do need to pay attention to those alerts as they come in and take the threat very seriously. Do what you can to prepare so that you keep your food refrigerated as long as possible by maybe purchasing some ice, you know, purchasing some coolers for situations like that. And, you know, keeping a kit with candles and other things that you're going to need to get you by. There are other programs that are kind of coming down the pike, such as battery storage. The Connecticut Green Bank is the operator for the state of Connecticut to help deploy 10,000 megawatts of battery storage. What they want to do, or actually I might have the megawatts wrong, I think it's 100 megawatts, 10,000 households they want to serve over the next 3 to 10 years. So what that means is if you happen to have a home with solar and you pair that with battery storage, when your power goes out, the battery will kick in and keep your electricity going for a few days. If you don't have solar, you can still have the benefits of battery storage, and we're working with the Green Bank to help deploy that program for the population that we serve. And the other thing that people can do is, you know, if you have some time, take a look at the PURA website and get a sense of what's happening in terms of the dockets that are going through, because there are a lot of energy-related issues that are happening through that process that impact everyone every day in their everyday lives. So those are the things that we recommend.
You actually mentioned something that triggered another question. We're talking this morning on Face Connecticut with the executive director of Operation Fuel. Her name is Brenda Watson with us this morning. You mentioned water, right? And there are various water issues going on across the country, but right now. But thinking about wintertime, it gets cold. Maybe somebody doesn't want to keep their house too hot or too warm because of their concerns with heating and so forth. And therefore, you get a frozen pipe or maybe more frozen pipes. Okay, so this is definitely a concern. And what do you have to say and talk about when it comes to frozen pipes?
That's an awful thing. I've actually recall a new a family that were new to home ownership. Excuse me. Who wound up homeless because their pipes froze as a result of not being able to fill their oil tank because of affordability issues. There were other things happening in the home that led to that. And I just think back on that experience for those folks, and it breaks my heart to know that that is what is driving some of the homelessness or people's homes going into foreclosure because of unpaid energy debt. I think that what people need to do is not wait at the last minute to get assistance and not make the assumption that they don't qualify. I mean, we go up to 75% of the state median income, which is around $94,000 annual, gross annual for a household of four. And, you know, that sounds like a lot of money, but given the cost of living in Connecticut, you know, once your taxes are paid, that's 30% off the top. Once your rent or mortgage is paid, that's another potential 30% off the. So that's 60% out the door already of your income. So don't wait till the last minute. Go to our website, give us a call. We also have a chat feature on our website in which you can chat with one of our staff members to, you know, for folks who don't like talking on a phone, to ask questions about the qualification process. And there are other resources out there. If you live in a municipality, you know, there are quite a few private fuel funds that are also available to people who live in certain towns. So And then there's always the State Energy Assistance Program, so also known as SEAP. So, you know, there are options for people out there. The other option is to call your utility company well in advance. Let them know that you're struggling, because I can assure you that the utility companies do not want to turn people off. Unfortunately, they just have to. But if you make arrangements with your utility company, that's another way to avoid shutoff. And even some fuel vendors have a payment system, a monthly payment plan. So you just never know if you don't ask.
Basically, this morning we're talking on Face Connecticut with Brenda Watson, the executive director of Operation Fuel. And basically, when people think about Operation Fuel, they may be just thinking about heating. It's not just about heating. And there are so many other impacts when it comes to fuel and going into these cold months. Water, electricity, also gas for cooking, too. Cooking is often impacted by fuel as well.
That's correct. Yes. If you own a gas stove, you can't turn your stove on if your gas is shut off. And if you, you know, if you have an electric stove and your electricity is shut off, you can't. Once your power goes out, you begin to see exactly what you cannot do. And one of those things is you can't lead a productive and safe life if you don't have utilities or heat or water in your home. These are life-saving basic needs, and it's unfortunate that so many people struggle with it. It's not isolated to Connecticut. 30% of the U.S. population struggles with energy affordability, and it really is a crisis. It's a national crisis.
I'd like to leave off. We only have a few minutes left here on Face Connecticut. I'd kind of like to leave off with this bigger picture question, right? Are there ways that we can fix this going into the future by looking at different energy forms in your eyes? I know that we all have a mix of different, we kind of in the United States have a bag of different energy resources, but I know that we're heavy in one particular area. How do we diversify as we move into the future to help with this issue, Brenda?
So the state of Connecticut is working really hard to deploy clean energy products to people who are struggling, everyday customers who at one time could not afford things like solar, and I spoke about battery storage earlier. Those products are now being made accessible to the everyday consumer. And honestly, those are the best ways in which you can keep your energy burden down and make yourself a little bit more resilient. Our power went out a couple weeks ago. It was only out for about 90 minutes. But what kept our street illuminated was everyone on our street who had solar lights on their deck. And I was just wondering to myself, like, wow, imagine if everyone on this street had access to solar. Well, we have access to solar, but what if everyone had solar panels on their homes, and what if everyone then had battery storage as a backup? It just, you know, all of these things are working, but they're also going to help people, like I said, reduce their energy burden. You know, people should investigate by going to the Energize CT website. You can learn about all of the different rebates and incentives that are available to everyday consumers to get them towards a path of renewable energy.
Brenda, it's been a pleasure having you this morning on Face Connecticut. Could we wrap up with one last question here? Could you just run down again some more basic information, how people can get in touch with Operation Fuel, how maybe they can make donations?
Yes. So the best way to reach us is by going to www.operationfuel.org. Do not wait until the last minute if you need assistance. And most of all, if you're in a position where you can give a dollar or more on your utility bill and gas bill, that's one of the easiest ways to support our efforts. The more money we raise through that program, the more assistance we can provide.
Brenda, thank you so much. We'll have to do another update soon, okay?
I'd love to come back and talk to you about the low-income discount rate, and I'll be in touch with you when a final decision comes down from PURA.
Fantastic. We'll talk then. Thank you, Brenda.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.